Chapter 3, which begins a tale of true love. Quote, "Perhaps I didn't live just in myself. Perhaps I lived the lives of others." Pablo Neruda, from his memoirs, Confieso que he vivido. The narrator begins this chapter. O Aphrodite, goddess of love, genital fire, and all things propitious to the union of opposites in heaven and on earth, your perilous spell forgets no man, no woman, no beast, dispensing both pleasure and sorrow in unruly and mournful quantities. Tell us now a story of burning infatuation called true love, sparing no canvas of sweet caress, nor portrait of spiritual ruin. Back on the ship, Mahogany set their course for Seville, and in the early evening they reached the mouth of the Guadalquivir. There they turned upstream, sailing through the night, until they arrived at their destination the next day. This was the same harbor that had received Columbus more than 500 years before. "Arrgh!" scowled Harvey, pausing to imagine the Niña, the Santa Maria, and the Pinta, their proud sails swollen with the wind. While the captain lingered in his rapture, Mahogany went ashore. Now, it had taken Mahogany more than a month to cross the Atlantic, and he was desperately unaccustomed to the presence of people. It was only natural, therefore, after so much solitude, that any contact with others should bring with it a sudden rush of adrenaline. And so it was, like so many seamen before him, that he fell in love with the first woman he saw. It seemed but a glance, a wink, perhaps, from a young woman on a city bus. But it was, in fact, the dastardly work of Aphrodite. Her son had shot an arrow just below the nipple of Mahogany's left breast, slicing his left atrium and continuing through the bottom of his heart, then passing his stomach and bladder and lodging securely in his loins. As the bus drove off, Mahogany signaled a taxi to follow, but when he reached the city center, there were a dozen buses with people boarding and descending. For an instant, he thought he saw her, but it was another. Then he cried out, but he was mistaken again. "There! Those were her eyes," he said, running through the crowd like a crazed dog. He searched the lines, he boarded the coaches, he entered the shops, but he could not find her. Finally, exhausted, he sat on the curb and buried his head in his hands. When he looked up, she was staring at him through the window of a departing bus. In the meantime, Harvey had also ventured out. He wandered, instinctively perhaps, to a small bodega near the center of town where he found a table for two. Almost immediately, a man approached. "Is this?" "Yes, my friend, that seat is taken," said the captain. "Likewise," said the man, "I believe I have reserved yours." "I'll let you know this is surely mine," said the captain. "And I lay claim to this one," said the man. "Then you must be Don Juan Tenorio," said Harvey. "And you, Don Capitan Harvey?" "Perhaps," said the captain. "You say so," said the man. "You don't believe?" said the captain. "No," said the man. "Neither do I," said the captain. "Enough games," Juan said. "I am Don Capitan," said Captain Harvey. "And I, Don Juan." "Are we ready?" said the captain. "We are," said Don Juan. "As gentlemen, we have kept our word," said Harvey. "Yes," said Don Juan, "and we shall see what we have done." "But first a drink," proposed the captain. "Yes," said Don Juan, "a drink." "The bet was," said Captain Harvey. "Who could seduce the most women in the space of a year," said Don Juan, and meet here today to prove it." "And here I am," said Harvey.
"And I," said Don Juan.
"Then speak," said Captain Harvey.
"As you like," Juan began, "for I am not one who waits for his soup to cool. And so, my friend, from dear Sevilla, where last we met, I left in search of broad horizons for my deeds. I went first to Italy, where pleasure is put on a pedestal from which I lowered many a virgin to raise again at my pleasure. I was forced to flee Rome, as one might imagine, in a paltry disguise on a hackneyed horse, escaping by a breath the hangman's noose. I joined the Spanish army, where I seduced the wives of several friends who were fighting on foreign soil. The people, upon seeing me, would sing out, 'Here is Don Juan Tenorio, with whom no man compares. From the highest princess to the poorest fisherwoman, there is no wench he won't pursue, nor adventure not undertake, if steeped in pleasure and fame.'" "From Spain I went to France," Don Juan continued, "then Belgium, then Holland, and I returned to France to enjoy the wife of a wealthy patriarch who had sworn me death for deflowering his daughter. After that I crossed the channel to England, where I grew knightly and in fame, until I caught a direct flight to Malaga and enjoyed a young madrileña as her mother slept beside her on last night's train. In each place I descended to the floors of huts, I scaled the walls of palaces, I broke the locks of cloisters, and left everywhere the bitter memory of myself. Here is my list. Count the names, if you will, and verify the victim's disgrace with a letter to the address that follows each."
"There is no need to count," said Harvey.
"Aha," said Don Juan, "then you admit you have lost."
"On the contrary," said Harvey, "I have won."
"You have seduced more than 72 women," said Don Juan.
"My list," said Harvey, "is without number." And he went on to describe his peculiar illness. "You see, by simply sitting with you, I have annexed your entire history and all the women you have conquered. The transfer is so complete as to enable me to describe your, that is, my encounters, with such certainty and precision of detail that even you would doubt it was not I who seduced them. Moreover, without the advantage of your list, the score of my conquests is still innumerable, for any woman I approach is attracted to me as if to her own reflection, and my comprehension of her desires is so complete as to leave her uncertain whether it is I or she that is performing the seduction. In fact, I have had to do little more than seduce myself in a lady's presence to leave her prostrate and satisfied on the couch."
"Harvey," cried Mahogany, bursting into the bar, "I've found her! I've found her! I've found the woman of my dreams!"
"Then let her remain there," said Harvey, "in your dreams, and don't drag her into the muck and scum of reality."
"What?" said Mahogany. "I thought you would think and feel as I do. You should relish this ecstasy."
"Ah, my friend," said Harvey, speaking in a voice not unlike Don Juan's, "love is a double-edged sword, a flight and a fall, and while you feel the kiss of its promise, I feel the blade of its grief. Hear the words of the disillusioned poet. Volverán las oscuras golondrinas en tu balcón sus nidos a colgar, y otra vez con el ala en sus cristales jugando llamarán, pero aquellas que el vuelo refrenaban tu hermosura y mi dicha al contemplar, aquellas que aprendieron nuestros nombres, esas no volverán." Translation: "The dark swallows will return to hang their nests in your balcony, and again, playing, they will call at your window with their wings. But the ones that stopped their flight
in order to contemplate your beauty and my happiness, the ones that learned our names, those will not return.
I don't speak Spanish, said Mahogany.
Those lines are from a poem by Gustavo Adolfo Bécquer, said Captain Harvey, a civilian who felt the same enchantment you feel now, and later felt the same heartache as I.
What you feel, Harvey continued, is akin to the poet's joy when the swallows, las golondrinas, come to the lover's window to share her beauty and his love, while I, disenchanted, feel the poet's sorrow after he has been betrayed and those same swallows do not return.
I'm not a swallow, said Mahogany, and rushed out of the bar.
By now Don Juan was at another table, making promises to a girl who sat with her grandmother. Harvey, left alone, stepped outside. No sooner did he move into the street than the blistering sun convinced him to seek shade. He wandered until he came upon a forested park and entered along a short path that led to a wooded grove. There he came to a statue of the poet whose verse he had just recalled and sat down to rest. On the bench next to him, a young woman was reading a copy of El Ingenioso Hidalgo Don Quixote de la Mancha. When Harvey moved near enough to take on the woman's personality, he found himself vicariously reading that delicious chapter in Part 2 that recounts the arrival of Sancho Panza and Don Quixote at the Duke's palace. The Duke and Duchess, having already read Part 1 of the novel, and being acquainted with Don Quixote's extraordinary delusion, have decided to humor the misguided knight-errant and entertain him and his squire as if they are indeed who they pretend to be. The woman stopped reading, and Harvey was jarred by a sudden revelation. Maybe he was mistaken about his illness. Maybe it was not that he was constantly imitating others, but that others were imitating him. Certainly, if the universe and all things in it were created from the void before time, then all personalities might have come from the void before the first personality, from a mental vacuum, as it were, not unlike his own. The world and all the things in it might simply be imitations of his infinite possibilities. Any costume was appropriate, because Harvey played all parts and all parts portrayed him. Inevitably, the world that had determined him had chosen him as their model. The woman continued reading, and a rush filled the captain's already teeming brain. Too many words, thought Harvey, and attempted to concentrate on just one. Out of the swarming pool, he chose the word it. He paused to consider its possible meanings, and once again he was struck with the idea that he was being imitated. This time it was a word, it, a word that could be everything, anything, and nothing. He reflected that the various meanings one word carried might proliferate to such an extent that within 100 years a handful of words could describe all of creation. Eventually, it could be reduced to a single one. Harvey paused. If one word were enough to contain all description, would not one man be sufficient to contain all men, perhaps even all things? And might not that one man be himself? He was chilled by the thought of his mortality. If he died, and was indeed the source and end of all things, what would remain after his death? Harvey glanced up to meet the eyes of a passing gentleman, whose life was an imitation of his, and whose life Harvey in turn was now imitating. Harvey considered that every person was indeed like himself, and that every death brought with it the annihilation of all things. It was almost 3 o'clock, 100 degrees in the shade, and the heat had begun to melt Harvey's brains. Instinctively, he set out for a cooler spot. The deep shadows of a nearby cathedral caught his attention, and he stepped inside. The church was empty, and the Gothic ceiling inspired a sense of insignificance that was impossible to feel beneath the perspectiveless sky. Singling out the velvet carpet of the altar as the most comfortable spot, Harvey flopped down to rest and was overcome with a deep sleep.